We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the chapter called The Activities of Lord Rishabhadev in 5th Canto, it's chapter number 6. And some verses in Bhagavatam, most of the verses in Bhagavatam are written in prose. Some of them are though written most of them are written in poetry. Some are written in prose. And they're not so easy to read for the people who are non-Sanskrit scholars. Anyway, I will try a little bit. I guess that's probably the reason why it's not on the board as well, because it's usually also a longer verse. So I will just try to read and then we will proceed to the word for word and the translation.
Ataiva makila lokapala lalamopi vilakshanair jadavada bhaduta vesha bhasha charitair avilakshita bhagavat prabhavo yoginam samparaya vidim anushikshayan sakalevaram jihasuratman yatmanam asamvya asamvya vahitam anarthantara bhava bhavena Bhavenan vikshamana uparatanu vrittir upararamam.
So that will be the verse. So we can read the verse word by word translation. Atha, thereafter. Evam, in this way. Akila loka palalalama. The head of all kings and monarchs of the universe. Api, although. Vilakshanai, various. Jadavat, as if stupid. Avaduta Vesha, Bhasha Charitai, by the dress, language, and characteristics of an avaduta. Avilakshita Bhagavat Prabhava, hiding the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the briquettes, keeping himself like an ordinary human being. Yoginam, of the yogis. Samparaya Vidim, the method of giving up this material body. Anushikshayan, teaching. Svakalevaram, his own personal body, which is not at all material. Jihasu, desiring to give up like an ordinary human being. Atmani, unto Vasudev, the original person. Atmanam, himself, Lord Rishabhadev, being an Avesha avatar of Lord Vishnu. Asamyavyavahitam, without intervention by the illusory energy. Anartha antara bhavena, himself in the status of Vishnu. Anvikshamana, always seeing. Uparata anuvriti, who has acting as if giving up his material body. Upararama, sees his pastimes as the king of this planet. Translation. Lord Rishabhadev was the head of all kings and emperors within the universe, but assuming the dress and language of an avaduta, he acted as if dull and materially bound. Consequently, no one could observe his divine opulence. He adopted this behavior just to teach the yogis how to give up the body. Nonetheless, he maintained his original position as a planetary expansion of Lord Vasudev Krishna, remaining always in that state, he gave up his pastimes as Lord Rishabhadev within the material world. If, following in the footsteps of Lord Rishabhadev, one can give up his subtle body, there is no chance that one will accept a material body again. The purport of Srila Prabhupada. As Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvata yaktva deha punar janma na eti mam eti sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in the material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. This is possible simply by keeping oneself an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. One must understand his constitutional position and the constitutional position of the Supreme Lord as well. Both have the same spiritual identity. Maintaining oneself as a servant of the Supreme Lord, one should avoid rebirth in the material world. If one keeps himself spiritually fit and thinks of himself as an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, he will be successful at the time he has to give up the material body. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasme Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Nama Shrestam Manumapi Shachiputra Matrasvarupam Rupam Tasya Grajam Rupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasyam Praptoyasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Guru Tam Natosmi. Dear devotees, thank you for coming and listening to the Bhagavatam class. The glories of Bhagavatam are so big, actually. When Mahavishnu Swami was here, he was making the point how the seat is for the book. The seat is not for the person, and the person who is sitting should give one's mouth to one's spiritual master and to the Bhagavata book. That's the idea. So I would like to pray for your blessings that I may be that kind of mouth that is the instrument in the service of Vaishnavas and Guru. And by that, I would like to begin. So, Lokanath Goswami said that whoever likes Bhagavatam is my best friend. The glories of Bhagavatam are so big, and we are very fortunate that we have this kind of knowledge in front of us. To say something about the particular verse that is here. When I read the verse first time, the thing that struck me the most was the point that the verse itself is making. In the verse it is said at the end, it explains the activities of Lord Rishabhadev, and at the end it says, if following in the footsteps of Lord Rishabhadev, one can give up his subtle body, there is no chance that one will accept the material body again, which is a message, which is a message for us. And we know actually that the whole, just to make a little framework for the verse that is today, we know that the whole actual life of Lord Rishabhadev was just a presentation for us to know how the ideal life is to be led, and the whole his whole life was actually there just to be example for the living entities. And the chapter before this, he gave priceless instructions. You know, I was preparing a little bit for today, last night I was reading the previous chapter, and again I was realizing how priceless these words are. It's just like condensed nectar. Every word is so significant in the instructions that he gives to his sons, and they were already liberated, they were already completely pure, and he was saying it only for our benefit. So everything that he did was for the benefit, including the leaving his body, which is one of the prominent topics in the Bhagavatam. Actually, the whole Bhagavatam obviously came up because King Parikshit wanted to make his life perfect by making his death perfect, and after making his inquiry how to make his death perfect and in that way his life perfect, he understood that he can do that by remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Lord Rishabhadev did the same in a little bit different manner. It is very interesting that Lord Rishabhadev, who was living a very exemplary life within Varnashram Dharma, within the rules and regulations of society, have rejected it at the end and have behaved like an avaduta. And here it's explained that he did it only to show mercy to the yogis. And this is only... why is this said? The question is, why is this said in such a way? Why did he do it such to show example to the yogis? Because the thing is that Lord Rishabhadev was perfectly conscious both in his Varna Ashram stage of life and then later when he renounced it. But he renounced it to show how at the end of the life one should focus solely on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and take the Supreme Lord as one's sole focus in order to prepare oneself for so to say, a successful death. In any case, I always, when I read Bhagavatam, I think, what is the personal application of these verses? These books are given for us, so what is the personal application? And here it is written about the how one should renounce one's subtle body. And that is very interesting because Srila Prabhupada repeatedly in his book is stressing, you are not this body, you are not this body, we are not these bodies. And he's repeatedly stressing it. And very often the devotees and people who read these lines, and including me, we think in terms of we're not this gross body. We're not, you know, we're not the pain that we feel when our tooth is paining. We're not that kind of body. But Srila Prabhupada also wants to tell us that we're also not our mind, that we are also not our subtle temporary character. Because all of us have a very specific individual character, which is temporary. It is built as a reaction or consequence of our previous deeds. We had different desires, and we did different things to fulfill them, and these things resulted in the body that we have now. And this body is not our real self. The soul is deeper than this body. So when it is written here that one should renounce, give up his subtle body, that's the body that is being referred to. And we can see that progressively as one advances in the spiritual life, one actually gets a little bit detached from one own's personal desires and whims that are connected with this body, and one has to learn tolerance. And that's why actually it's very interesting that in order to do all of this, to renounce one's subtle body, which is very difficult because we've been with our mind for such a long time, we're very attached to it. So the problem is not that we have a subtle body, the problem is that we have such a great attachment to it. and we identify with it. We think that that this mind and this kind of the mind will say these are your likes, these are your dislikes, and we are very attached to these things. So the problem is the attachment, and this attachment can only be given up in one way, because when it is said to give up the subtle body, one cannot really completely give it up as long as one has this body. But the point is that one should give up the attachment to it, and in that way one should give up the subtle body. And this can be done only in one way, and that is explained repeatedly by all acharyas in all the scriptures. In the Bhagavatam specifically, it's explained that this lower attachment, so to say, to our so-called temporary personal wantings, is we are able to overcome that only in one way, by developing a superior attachment. And that superior attachment is obviously the attachment to Krishna and to Krishna's devotees. And this kind of superior attachment will come naturally if one spends time with Krishna and his devotees, and one has to learn how to take shelter of Krishna and his devotees. And it's explained there are five such core important verses that explain this process. And Srila Prabhupada, when he came to America, he wrote this poem. It's a very interesting poem. He expresses his feelings to Lord Krishna about his mission. He's coming and he's asking for empowerment. And in asking for empowerment, in being very humble and asking for empowerment, he's describing the condition of people in Kali Yuga. And he says, how will I deliver these people? They're so much immersed in modes of passion and ignorance. So this is the thing. All of these attachments come from that, because the thing is that once you have the knowledge, this is what Srila Prabhupada points out in the verse, one has to know what is our position and what is Krishna's position. One has to know that, and that can be known only through realization. So we have to, in one point, understand who is Krishna and who am I. And in when one gets transcendental knowledge by Krishna's mercy, when one gets transcendental knowledge, naturally he becomes detached from these temporary things. But to get that, the question is how can we come to such an, at least from our perspective, elevated stage of being completely deprived of this ignorant thinking that we are our body. And Srila Prabhupada in this song have actually, in the middle of the song, that is a very interesting thing, in the middle of the song he puts five verses from Bhagavatam. You know, sometimes people, even when they give class, they're a little shy to quote the verses. Maybe they quote the first two lines. They don't want to intimidate the listeners by too much Sanskrit or something like that. Srila Prabhupada puts five whole verses. And that's actually, recently they published this book with poems of Srila Prabhupada. There was this endeavor to collect all the poems in one place that he wrote, to translate them all worldwide by word. It's a very nice book. It's called The Shower of Divine Compassion. If you haven't heard of it, it exists in BLS. It's recently published, maybe in the last 2 years, not more than that. And this book contains all the poems of Srila Prabhupada so far that we have found, that we know, and it's collected from different things, you know. So in any case, when one reads the whole thing, Srila Prabhupada have written only one poem, Shishir Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada have written only one poem in Sanskrit, all the other poems are in Bengali. Just 1 second. So all the other poems are in Bengali, and in none of the other poems he doesn't put like the whole five verses. So obviously these five verses are so significant for us, and I think that if we, it's important to know one's position that is described by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's important to know one's position, to know what is the goal, and to know the means how to get to the goal. So these five verses are actually the means how to get to the goal. And even though that they're very famous and devotees might know them, I would actually like to read them here just as an answer to this question, because in the verse it says one should renounce one's subtle body. But how to do that? Attachment is there. It's explained this attachment is like a hard knot in the heart, you know? You know when you tie a knot once, twice, three times, it's strong. But can you imagine if you tie a knot again and again and again in the same place? It becomes this huge ball that you can't untie. You have to explain that you have to take, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, you can't untie it. You have to take the sword of knowledge and cut it in half. So the question is, how can we, who are completely, I mean, we're insignificant in a sense that we're small. We have all the qualities of Krishna, but we don't have the power to overcome Daivihi Esha Guna Maya. It's the divine energy that is covering us. It's not only something small. Actually, the energy that is covering us is Krishna's energy. So only with Krishna's help we can manage to uncover ourselves. So the verses which start with Srinvatam Svakata Krishna and the next five verses, I will actually read the translations in English because for us that's more useful than to read the Sanskrit sometimes. So I want to read these verses because this is our process. This is how Krishna consciousness works and how we can actually manage to be relieved from our false ego. It says, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So Krishna will do it for us. He will clean our heart. All we need to do is hear. Srinvatam, we need to hear. We need to hear Krishna's messages. And Krishna's messages are described in the Bhagavatam. And the second verse says, by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering the service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome in the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So we are getting, it's amazing, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and the mercy of Krishna. It's just amazing, you know. We just need to sit and hear and hear and hear again and again. And just by this hearing, just by this, everything that we have, all the contaminations will go away and we will get the loving devotional service, which is irrevocable. It doesn't go back. Once you get it, that's it. You can't lose it. You can be covered for a long time if you do offenses to devotees. Sometimes people get covered for lifetimes. But you can't lose it just by hearing. And then it says, as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy. So the verse before that Rasamandala Prabhu spoke about was actually speaking about these enemies of lust, anger, and pride that actually deprive one's from one's biggest fortune. So so it is described, once by hearing you become endowed with loving service. Once that is there, just by the power of the devotional service, the bad qualities will go away and one will be established in the mode of goodness, because before that one can't really practice in a fixed manner. The one of our problems is that we go up and then we go down. We go up, we go down. We rise in devotional life, we do some nice things for Krishna, but then we become covered. We wake up tomorrow and we're just covered. We're sleepy all day, we just have a desire to eat all day and just, you know, speak some irrelevant things, you know. And I mean, nobody can deny that there are days such as this. They just come on their own, because Krishna also describes in Bhagavad Gita that the waves of modes come, you know, one and then another and then a third one, and they shift, and we have to become strong so these waves that don't put us down. And we can only become strong by taking shelter of Krishna. So then devotee becomes established in the goodness, then one is able to practice steadily. Then you can practice steadily. Once you start practicing steadily, it's like a ray of light that is keeping, you know, it's like Tivrena Bhakti Yogina. It's like a very intense ray of light. It's on one place and it starts heating. Because if you pour water on it, the fire of love in the heart will not burn. But once one becomes steady, then then it is possible to actually achieve something, to make bigger steps in the devotional life. And then he says, thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. Thus, the knot in the heart is pierced, and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive action is terminated when one sees the self as the master. This is very interesting because our verse speaks about living the subtle body, and the subtle body is all about fruitive action, because that's why we're here. Because the spiritual world, everybody is selfless. Everybody thinks about the interest of Krishna. Everybody thinks about the how to develop devotional service. Nobody thinks about how one wants to enjoy a particular fruit and then endeavors for that. One wants to create a fruit and then give it to Krishna. So that is practically fruitless because you don't want to fruit to yourself. And it's interesting because Lord Rishabhadeva instructs the yogis, and he points out that only by devotional service this is possible, because both jnana and karma, as Rupa Goswami says, jnana karmadhyana navritam, we have to be relieved from jnana and karma. Both jnana and karma are actually fruitful, because in karma, obviously, one consciously makes an endeavor to gain a certain fruit. And in karma, in jnana or in acquiring knowledge, it's a little bit more subtle, but one still wants to get a little bit more subtle kind of fruit. One still wants the liberation, one still wants to possibly enjoy the reputation of being detached and things like that. So the bhakti is the only process which is actually selfless, and it's the only process that can give freedom to the soul. And this freedom can be gained only through surrender. And sometimes surrender is seen as something that is like very difficult to do, and especially in the West, people, you know, when they hear even the word surrender, they have this picture of a slave and a master, and you know, there's this kind of negative impression to the word surrender. But surrender actually means freedom. If we read the books of our acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, in their prayers, they speak, because they go from the beginning until the end, you know. There are these few books of poems where they go from the beginning of the process, they explain their fallen condition, and they go through all the process of surrender, and then until they describe how they attain the shelter of Krishna and Krishna's associates. I just want something. So in these books, which are written by people who have actually done it, you know, we have such privilege to have path given to us, not by some speculation, but by people who have actually attained this, who have realized this, who have gone through it. So it's a very safe environment. We can be quite. We don't have to be anxious. We have so many predecessors that have gone through the path. You know, if you don't know the path, you have to be very. But they will warn you about all the. So in any case, the point is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains his ecstasy. He says, "Now that I have surrendered to you, I became supremely happy. I am freed from all of my anxieties, because once I surrender to you, all the things I'm doing for your benefit, everything that I do is done for your benefit, and I have no more." Weight on my heart of doing things for my own self. Everything that I do is for you. Even if I make the mistake, that is also your. It is your problem, because I'm doing my best and I'm limited. So he explains this freedom, and actually to be relieved from a subtle body, it's only possible in a humble position. Because one has to understand, this is my position. I just have to go on. And the only actually, Srila Prabhupada explains in one of the purports from the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada explains how solely by submissiveness one will acquire darshan of Krishna. Just by being submissive, by realizing that my position is such, and if I want to get any kind of taste I just have to realize by my pride, which is so much connected with this temporary character. You know, I'm proud by some kind of, you know, because by different kind of punyas or good pious activities in the previous lives, we get certain good qualities which are temporary in this life. You know, somebody may have a lot of, may be knowledgeable, somebody may be beautiful, somebody may be rich. Like that, we can have a little bit. Krishna borrows a little bit, gives us a little bit of his opulences because we did something nice in the past, and we become very kind of proud. We think this is mine. And this is what he's explaining. We should renounce this body. We should renounce this character. We should understand this is here for the service of Krishna. It is not here for me. So when one becomes humble in such a way, then taste can come. And then one can surrender. And in that way, one can be aloof. I have this character. It's here for some time. I will use it for Krishna. Because actually, it's described by all the acharyas. It's described by Srila Prabhupada. It's described by Narottam Das Thakur. We cannot be desireless. This is not our position. The nature of the soul is that the soul is full of desires, and these desires should be transformed. So we also cannot in one way give up this subtle body, but we can transform it. We can point it out towards Krishna. We can point out all of our desires towards Krishna, and in that way get purified. Because even, for example, Dhruva Maharaj or the gopis of Vrindavan, they got liberated. It's explained that their bodies became spiritual while they were still present. It's something that is actually rarely seen. It's a little bit of an, so to say, exotic or a rare occasion that is being done by Krishna. But it's explained that the gopis were so much absorbed in thinking about Krishna that they gave up it's explained they gave up their bodies. So acharyas explained that actually what happened is that their bodies gave up its own materiality. In other words, their bodies became spiritual. From all the absorption, their bodies became spiritual, and that is the reason why we one of the reasons why we put why the bodies of acharyas are put in samadhis and respected with such opulence is because they are spiritual completely, and that is the way to give up the subtle body, to actually purify it, because we do have a spiritual body and it has its features. So this should be done, and with this I would like to kind of finish on this verse. I also wanted, if possible, to just give a few minutes to say a little bit about Vasudev Ghosh. It is his disappearance day today. So it is nice to be aware of our acharyas and to know a little bit about them. I will just say a few words about Vasudev Ghosh. And then we can have the questions in the end. If there is some question we can about the previous thing, we can address it at the end. So Vasudev Ghosh was the eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda. It's actually explained that he belonged to the boat. Some devotees are described as eternal associates of Lord Nityananda and some as Lord Chaitanya. So anyway, Vasudev Ghosh was of both. He had two brothers. They were actually quite famous Vaishnavas. Vasudev Ghosh, Madhava Ghosh, and Govinda Ghosh. And these three brothers were born in this Kayastha family. Kayasthas are very famous as being very smart and sometimes dangerous. There, and Raghunath Das Goswami was also born in a Kayastha family. In any case, they were famous by their kirtans. If one reads Chaitanya Charitamrita, all different associates of Lord Chaitanya had a particular thing, particular service in which they were really good at, and they would please Lord Chaitanya by doing this service. So these three brothers were very good in singing for Krishna and in composing songs for Krishna. And it's described that whenever these three brothers would sing, both Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda would immediately come and immediately start dancing in ecstasy. They were so empowered. Their singing was so powerful. And for Vasudev Ghosh specifically, it's described that when he would sing, the wood and stone would start melting. He would sing with so much love that not only the hearts, but the wood and the stone would start melting. And that is very interesting, because the one thing that I will tell you later, that the stone would melt, because Vasudev Ghosh, he says for himself, I have a stone instead of a heart. But he would melt stone when he would speak. And yes, so in one point, they were personal associates, they spent a lot of time with Lord Chaitanya and Vasudev Ghosh and his brother Madhava Ghosh. They also joined when Lord Chaitanya sent or requested Lord Nityananda to go to Bengal and preach. So when Lord Nityananda went for his tour in Bengal, Vasudev Ghosh and Madhava Ghosh went with him. And they were very famous. And also, these brothers, you know that it's described when there was this Ratha Yatra, big Ratha Yatra festival in which Lord Chaitanya became so ecstatic and expanded himself in seven different dancing groups. There were seven different kirtan groups. And because there were so many people and Lord Chaitanya was giving mercy to everybody, he expanded himself in seven forms and danced in the seven groups so everybody could, and only a few devotees actually could see that, which is interesting that we who are Kali Yuga residents by mercy of Srila Prabhupada can know such truths, you know. I mean, only a few people who could see this opulence that Lord Chaitanya, everybody thought, oh, he's only in my group. But a few people could see that he expanded himself. And one of these groups was led by the Ghosh brothers, so to say. And yes, so they were very... And the lead dancer in this group was Vakreshwar Padit, who in himself was very famous for being good dancer and good in kirtan. In any case, Vasudev Ghosh wrote many beautiful poems about Krishna, and I just wanted to end by reading one of his poems. And then we can have questions. So Vasudev Ghosh says, if Lord Gora, please listen, this is such a beautiful song. If Lord Gora had not incarnated, if Lord Gora had not appeared as the Yuga avatar in this age of Kali, then what would have become of us? How could we have tolerated living? Who in this universe would have ever learned about the topmost limit of loving mellows that comprise the glory of Sri Radha? Who would have had the power to render ecstatic devotional service that follows in the footsteps of the damsels of Braja? Indeed, the clever expertise of the Braj Gopis is the prerequisite for entering the supremely sweet forest of Vrinda Devi. Oh, please sing again and again. Oh, please sing again and again of the glorious qualities of Lord Gauranga. Just try to keep your heart simple. Not even one person within this ocean of nations has ever seen such magnanimous personality as he. Even though I chant the holy name of Lord Gauranga, somehow I still have not melted in ecstasy. How then have I maintained the burden of this body? How has the Creator fashioned this body with a stone in the place of Vasudev Ghosh's heart? If you want to be rid of the menace of the dog-like personality of Kali, then just sing the glories of the beautiful son of Sachi. He is the savior of the Kali Yuga, and he is the destroyer of all fear caused by the age of quarrel. So this is one of his beautiful poems. And I was thinking to, because I saw that the verse wasn't written here, so I was just thinking to write this thing that he says, just keep your heart simple, you know? Just keep your heart simple. So I was thinking so much about this beautiful instruction, just keep your heart simple and sing the name of Lord Gauranga, and that's what we need to do. Just hang on to the tree, you know. We can't do it by our own power, but Krishna can do it for us. If we just hang on to the mercy, to the feet of the spiritual master, to the feet of Srila Prabhupada, just, you know, because it's explained, we're like green mangoes, so if we just stay on the tree in one point, we will be ripe. By Krishna's mercy only. Rupa Goswami says, he says, I have no qualification. I wasn't born in a good family. I have no transcendental knowledge. I have no taste for hearing Krishna Katha. He explains. He has all of that, but he says for us. He says, but I hope. I hope against hope that you will give me your mercy. I'm certain that you will give me your mercy because you are so magnanimous. So this is our position. I personally think that everybody in Kali Yuga is Kripa Siddha. It's explained that there is this Kripa Siddha, devotee who becomes perfect by mercy, a devotee who becomes perfect by performing sadhana, and devotee who is eternally perfect. So we can be either become perfect by Kripa, by mercy, or by sadhana. And even though that it is our duty to perform sadhana, I think that in this age, you know, we can all just be, we're really all, I mean, I'm sorry to say, but kind of mercy cases of Lord Gauranga and Srila Prabhupada. And we do perform our sadhana, but at the end, if we get it, we will get it by their mercy. So thank you very much. I will end here. I hope there was something valuable being said, and if there is any questions, I can answer or comments or anything like that. Actually, it's not said by developing love. It's said that the thing is that by hearing, one becomes freed from anarthas. So the process goes like, it starts with shraddha, and then sadhusanga, bhajana, kriya, anartha, nivritti, nishta, right? So it's first anartha, nivritti, which means the getting freed from anarthas. And that is what is said here. Let me read it. Yeah, it's established in the heart, but that is given. I mean, everything is given in one sense, but the point is that what is said here, he says, by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. So that's called anartha nivritti. And then it says, and loving service on the personality of God that is established as an irrevocable fact. And it kind of comes together because as Lord Chaitanya says, Cheto Darpana Marchana, when you remove the dust from the mirror, you see yourself and you see Krishna, and love is naturally there. Because if you hear Bhagavatam, love will come. And bhava is one stage, but that doesn't mean that before bhava we have no feelings for Krishna and that we have no love for Krishna. Because actually, the taste is the thing that pushes us through all of these stages, you know. Because by association of devotees, we get, you know, we get taste to go through all of this. Otherwise, nobody can do it, you know. We are not, it's not possible without any taste to do it. But when it is said bhava, and then it means that love has reached a certain, opulence or certain depth. So there are all of these symptoms and everything, but it doesn't mean that the love is not there before. Because naturally, once one finishes with anartha nivritti, or once one goes through that stage, naturally love will be there. Because that's actually the only way to go through the stage. There's no way to abandon bad qualities unless one develops attachment. So as one is developing attachment, the bad qualities goes away, and vice versa. But just by removing the bad qualities, unless one has association of devotees, book Bhagavata or person Bhagavata, there's no way one can get, and also attachments will come back. It's not really deep. But by developing attachment, the lower taste goes away completely, and then one becomes fixed. And not that one becomes fixed only because of love, but because, you know, goodness comes. Ignorance is removed. As the irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's mode of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear. Then devotee is established in goodness and becomes completely happy. So establishing goodness, that's nishta. Because then you can practice properly. And once you practice properly, as I was saying, you know, tivra bhakti, intense devotional service, then bhava naturally comes from the heart. Because all of these feelings are there in, Srila Prabhupada explains that they're there in unmanifested state. So they when we remove all the dust from the mirror of the heart, then naturally by still continuing to put the water of hearing and chanting on the plant, bhava naturally comes. So but it's impossible to do that completely before the nishta is done, because there is so much disturbances. You know, you're proud. You know, you pray to Krishna, everything is very nice. You pray to Krishna, and at one point you start thinking, oh, I have prayed so nice. I'm such a humble devotee. This prayer is so nice. Krishna must be showing me his pride, you know? Pride comes. So it immediately destroys. You know, it immediately breaks your mood of prayer. It immediately breaks your connection with Krishna. Paramatma immediately tells you this is not what you're supposed to be doing. So then you have these moments when you're sincere, and then you have moments when you're covered by pride. For example, let's say pride. And so you're not nishta, because there is a lot of ignorance there in pride. So we have to understand that by this pride is keeping us away from our biggest treasure, which is relationship with Krishna. We're missing it because we have all of these bad qualities. So if we want to not miss it anymore, the best thing in the world, you know, relationship with Krishna is the most relishable, then we just have to hear and hear and hear and hear again and again and again, and then hold on to the tree, chant your mantra. You know, we all got mantra from Srila Prabhupada, we should chant it. You know, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Gopakumar, he gets through all the planets and he gets darshan of Krishna, he hugs Krishna only by the power of his mantra. He gets this mantra from a guru, he doesn't explain anything, he gives him the mantra. And he chants and chants. I was listening to Mara Lakshmani. She gave such an amazing class on this point. And her whole point was, he gets the mantra from his guru, he chants it, and this is what brings him, you know. This is what brings him there. So that's the way, that's the means. Anyway, I don't know if I got to answer kind of your question. It's a little technical, but it is there. If one takes these verses and analyzes them, it's explained. Yeah. Anything? Mahaprabhu, can we take one more question? Okay. Yeah, it is. It's explained that. There is something that is technically in nectar devotion. It's explained as tatashta lakshana and svarupa lakshana. So tatashta lakshana means secondary principle, and svarupa lakshana means primary principle. So primary principle is always remember Krishna. Primary principle is loving service of Krishna. Secondary principle is never forget Krishna or control your mind. Because there is a positive thing. There is always, this is explained, yama, niyama, you know. So first, you do the more important thing is the positive thing. Because negative thing will go away in one point, but the positive thing should stay. All our material impediments in the heart in one point will go away, but by mercy of Krishna and Guru. But the relationship with Krishna should stay. So that is the important thing, because that is always there. And we should, without going towards the goal, it's impossible to give up, you know, to control the mind. So controlling the mind is essential, you know. I went, last year I took the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and I went systematically through all the verses, and because Krishna explains certain things that we should do. And he says control the mind like 20 times in 40 verses. So it's definitely very important, but controlling the mind is a means to an end. It's not an end in itself. The end in itself is relationship with Krishna. So that was his point, I guess. That you know, tapasya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, tapasya, punya, all of these things, if it's not directed towards Krishna and towards devotional service, it's useless. But in order to obtain Krishna, one will do everything that is possible. You know, if you want something, you will do everything that is there to get it. You know, so that's what explained. Do the favorable and don't do the unfavorable. And that's our process. It's simple. You know, there are like Rupa Goswami says, Upadeshamrita, these are the six favorable things. These are the six unfavorable things. Do the favorable, stop doing the unfavorable, and that's it. That's it. But even that we can't do without mercy of devotees. Without their help, nothing is possible. So. But the point is, yeah, controlling the mind is important. But it's a secondary principle. Yeah, well, it's like you take the lowest possible creatures and you give them the best possible thing that in previous ages the people who meditated for hundreds and thousands of years with a pure mind, with pure action, you know, pure in everything, they couldn't even conceive of it, you know? Not that they couldn't attain it. Nobody even knew that it exists. Like, prema is such an extraordinary thing. And even the fact that the citizen of Kali Yuga can say the name prema, can even, you know, it's such an extraordinary thing. And even if somebody before could hear about it, because when Krishna descended, people could hear about it, but nobody understood it and nobody could attain it. Very small number of group. Then it's explained, Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, they came, they plundered. There is a treasure house of love of God. They broke in. You understand? They broke in and they started distributing to everybody because they were so much intoxicated with love that they didn't think, oh, you're qualified, you're not qualified. Just give it to everybody. Let the whole universe drown in the ocean of prema. And can you imagine, you're taking the worst people. Like you know, as the yugas progress, people get liberated. So Kali Yuga is like, you know, you know when you sift the thing, what stays, the rocks and stuff, that's Kali Yuga people. So you take that and you make the best preparation of it for Krishna, you know? That's what Lord Chaitanya does. So it's such an extreme opposition in one sense. Who is Lord Chaitanya and who are we? But still we get the best mercy. So that's why it's explained. The demigods are waiting in a line to get a birth in Kali Yuga. Because this is not available in so easily. So, I probably guess that you could speak for a year about the glories of Lord Gauranga and our fallen position, but that's maybe what I would say on that. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.